BetOnline remains your number one source for all your college basketball betting this season. Get analysis of every play, prop, and point at BetOnline. You'll find the latest odds, bracket contests, team matchups, and game trends at BetOnline. Updated odds for everything from live games to conference championships right through to the Final Four and championship game. BetOnline is your college basketball headquarters this season. Head to the website today, use your mobile device to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Be sure to use promo code BELIEVE to receive your bonus. That's B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, to receive your bonus. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. Welcome to Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Ben Online. I'm your host, Warren Shaw. He is the great Gary Washburn, and we're your host and resource for everything Celtics this season. Gary's been a minute. Haven't talked to you since the All-Star break, my brother. How you been? What's been going on?
Everything's good. We're getting close to the finish line of the NBA in terms of the regular season. And now, I don't know how big college basketball fan you are, but man, it's getting warming up. Thursday's the first day of games. Couple games tonight. The first four, if you're really into that, you know, seeing the 16 seeds go at it, and the teams have barely made it, but great time in sports right now, so it should be really fun, and so yeah, really good time as we kind of dive into the playoffs coming up in about 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's really amazing, right? We're just about a month away here from the playoffs, and a lot to kind of discuss here with this Boston Celtics team. As, you know, they've stumbled a little bit here down the, you know, since the All-Star break and so forth. But we'll get into that, the crux. As always, you know, we got to do our plugs. So make sure you give us a 5-star rating on whatever your podcast platform is. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at G Washburn Globe for Gary, or at Shaw Sports NBA for me. Make sure you're following Believe at Believe Network or Believe Sports. Now, we want to kind of just jump right in because, again, it's been a minute. So we got a lot to get into. News of the week in some ways for Boston is Damon Stoudemire. Has already left the team. I guess it's done. Like, I usually these types of things, I think, like, hey, at the end of the season, you know, you'll transition on. But Damon Stoudemire accepts a head coaching job at Georgia Tech. And I believe it's already like a 4 or 5 year deal already. So, you know, amazing situation for him. Talk to us a little bit about that. Cause I have some questions and theories that I want to get into, but what's your sense of the situation with Stoudemire, and in some ways kind of the abrupt, you know, departure to go to that job immediately?
Yeah, Warren. The thing about it is that Damon, great guy. I mean, great guy, good experience with him over the last couple of years. You know, a lot of some of these guys, you know, we look at these guys and their assistants, but some of these guys want to be head coaches, right? Walter McCarty was the same way. And Walter McCarty wanted to coach in college. He was fine with that. Some NBA assistants want to stay in the NBA, want to be NBA head coach. Damon, after coaching at UOP, University of Pacific in Stockton, for 5 years and kind of uplifting the program to where they were respectable, obviously he got a chance to coach with his friend Ime Udoka with the Celtics and back in the NBA. You know, obviously the guy played 12, 13 years in the league, was rookie of the year. A guy was a quality point guard. And, you know, people don't know about Damon Stoudemire. Look at his YouTube tapes or whatever during his years. He was a little dude, they called him Mighty Mouse for a reason because he was a small guy. But, man, he could get to where he wanted to get to on the floor. But I think he always kind of had his eyes on, you know, if the opportunity came up to coach in college again. And obviously, I think, one, he was looking at jobs. Me and him talked college hoops all the time. So he was very up to date on college. And a lot of these coaches, you know, they have to do two things. You know, they have to coach in the position they're in, but also figure out, okay, what's next for me, right? Do I want to go back to college? And a lot of, you know, as we know, Warren, a lot of guys with NBA experience who are used to coaching men who have been to the league are very popular now to coach college ball. Look at Jerry Stackhouse at Vanderbilt. Like, there's a recipe now where these, you're coaching players, and I mean, the players have changed, Warren, as we know. The days of Grant Hill and guys going to 4 years, these guys want to go to the league. You know, they want to get recruited when they're 16, 17. They want to be told, this is what I'm going to do for you to get you to the league in 2 to 3 years. And they look at Damon as a guy who has been in the league, played in the league, coached in the league, and can do that. And Georgia Tech, I think, is a good situation. And I don't think he would have taken any job. This is a situation is, I mean, you follow college sports. Georgia Tech's kind of a sleeping giant. Like, I can't figure out why Georgia Tech isn't good in basketball and in football. They're in Atlanta. Like you've been to Atlanta. I've been to Atlanta. I have stayed near Georgia Tech. Like, I've been on the campus. Like, you're looking and you're like, okay, how come you can't get ball players here?
Right.
Like, this is, it's in the heart of the city in terms of just, you know, right there. It's not 30 miles outside of downtown. It's Georgia Tech is there. Nice facilities. I've been on the campus, as I said. The Celtics have practiced there during the years when they played like Atlanta in the playoffs and they had practice sessions at Georgia Tech. So I think for him, this was the perfect situation. The ACC, big time college ball, Power Five. This is not, you know, a small school, or this is not a situation where you're kind of questioning. 5-year contract. So now he's got plenty of time to turn that thing around, start recruiting guys and figuring out how to uplift the program. So I think that it took the perfect situation for him to leave. Now, of course, I do think that Dame wants to be an NBA head coach. I think that's ahead of him in his future. He could have continued to be. Now, let's be honest, Warren, if the Celtics had given him the head coaching job over Joe Mazzulla, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? He would be coaching the Celtics. But the fact that he's an assistant and that he's got to look out for himself, and as we all do in many cases, his own best interest, a 5-year long-term contract, a chance to coach a big-time program, resurrect and be responsible. And Georgia Tech is serious about winning. You know, they've been down for a while. They've had a couple years here and there. And, you know, the Chris Bosh years and Amon Shumpert and guys. And, you know, most recently, our friend Jose Alvarado played at Georgia Tech, I think went to a tournament. But it's been a program that's been down pretty much since Kenny Anderson and Dennis Scott.
Well, let me interrupt you, you know, really quickly, only in the aspect, because you touched on something I think is so, you know, poignant. So, again, laid out all the great reasons to go, right? These are amazing reasons to go. I think but the question, I think a lot of Celtics are like, why right now? Like, why couldn't wait until the end of the season per se, you know, and finish out the job here with the Celtics team still has a chance at an NBA championship. I know it's looked a little rough lately, but
I agree, Warren, but one, you got the transfer portal, like the season's over and you've got, I mean, the question is, can Damon be a full-time assistant coach and then also recruit, go into houses, try to get the hottest, you know, guys in the transfer portal? Because, as you know, when it's a full-time, like, this is like free agency now. This whole thing has changed, man, like from 5 years ago. I mean, every player who didn't play as much as he wanted to is hitting the portal. One day I read Jeff Goodman's tweet, 173 guys entered the transfer portal in one day.
Wow.
Right. Whenever their team was either eliminated from the conference tournament, didn't make the NCAAs or whatever, 173 players. So if you're Stoudemire, I'm sure he probably wanted to stay, but one, you're talking about 3 more months if they make a long run, right? The NBA finals, and he's got to recruit, go into houses, introduce himself to a team. Like, I just think that's a lot. And okay. I think, you know, and as much as you're saying, I'm sure you know, fulfill your commitment, man. You were supposed to be here, and I get it. I think he was split, but I also think he understands the game here. And, like, I think April's a big signing day where, you know, you can start, and then there could be some unsigned seniors. There's going to be, you know, and the thing about Warren, like, Warren, what about the guys who committed to Georgia Tech and then had Pastner, their previous coach, fired?
Right.
So Damon's got to re-recruit those guys.
Triage.
Right?
Yeah.
He got to go to the host houses or make those phone calls and say, hey, we want you here, you know, or, hey, you know, you might want to look somewhere else. Like, he's got to look at game tape, figure out who they recruited, who is committed, who is signed, who's transferring in, Who's transferring out? Like, I think that's so much. And I understand if I'm the Celtics, they're in a, not a great position for this. But also, you know, can you add another assistant coach in the middle right now? Can you add a guy who can help? Can you bring up someone? Can you find someone who can maybe help you? I think that's a that would be a great idea for Missoula, because as we'll talk about soon, the team isn't in a good place right now. So it's really not a good time. If the team had won 15 straight and was cruising to the number one seed, I think everybody would feel better about Sotomayor leaving. But the fact is they're struggling, and it's like, well, damn, you're pulling away the only guy on the staff. Aaron Miles does have NBA experience, but, you know, like with extensive NBA experience, that guy is gone. So if I'm Missoula, I might be looking for a guy who could help out, someone in the organization or someone who can say, okay, I'll join you guys for a couple of months to give my point of view or some authority on things, as opposed to going now with your kind of a skeleton staff, losing Hardy, you know, and to me, you know, who's your top assistant now? Ben Sullivan, I believe. So it does not put the Celtics, Warren, in a great position, but I do understand Stoudemire feeling like, I got to go all in on this five-year contract. And, you know, and who knows, honestly, Warren, what was Stoudemire's contract through this season? Was he committed? Was he signed long-term with the Celtics? Right. Or was he going to have a renew of a contract this summer when the season ended? You know, was that – so he's saying here, 5 years renegotiation. Now, if the Celtics said, hey, we're going to offer you a five-year extension to be an assistant, I don't know how attractive that is, because he wants to be a head coach. Yeah. So tough position for both sides there, Warren.
Yeah, no, I definitely, again, as you laid it out, it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the college game is tough. And for him, especially as you alluded to, they're committing 5 years to you. So you got to feel like, hey, I got to go in and commit immediately and get this show on the road. Exactly. For all the great reasons. Again, you know, Power Five conference, there's a lot of talent. Again, the triaging of current players now who might be upset that their coach is no longer there. All those things make a lot of sense. Two quick points, you know, I want to kind of touch in on this, and then we'll kind of close the book on Damon Stoudemire here. Did you get any sense or angst, or so to speak, that in essence that he felt like he might have got passed up? And as you alluded to, he wants to be a head coach, but, you know, was there anything on the sidelines with him, Mazzullo? Is there anything to the recent slide that maybe even said, you know what, maybe it's now a good time to kind of get out of here as well, too? Anything in that lane? And then I want to ask you one quick follow-up after that.
No, I think he believes in the players. I don't think the recent slide or the recent, you know, struggles led to this. The question is, what went into the decision-making to give Mazzullo the job as opposed to Stoudemire? Mm-hmm. And because Stoudemire had been a Division I head coach, had played in the league, you know, guys know who he was, 95 Rookie of the Year, Mighty Mouse, great career at Arizona. I mean, led Arizona to the Final Four in 94. You know, a guy who's very accomplished. Now, was it because Mazzullo had been there longer? Was it because he was closer to Brad? Was Stoudemire's ties with Ime Udoka, did that hurt him in terms of getting a head coaching job? Like, you know, in this situation, do you name someone who's very close to Udoka as the head coach when, you know, basically you've suspended him, Udoka, for some off the court things? Do you give him the job? Like, you know, so maybe Stoudemire got caught into guilty by association, or just that association with Ime that might, and I never got from him, hey man, like, this is some BS, I should have been head coach. No, never got that. He was grateful. He was happy to be around the guys. I mean, the day that they announced the suspension, Damon was working with the guys. He was at the practice facility. You know, he didn't take a week off. He didn't, him, Aaron Miles, the guys who were close to Ime, kept working. Kept it moving. And I think he understood the situation, and he's remained close to Ime. They talk, you know, so I just think the situation for him, the fact, I don't know if he expected Georgia Tech to come after him.
Gotcha.
Because I do know another Power Five school that inquired about him 2 months ago, and he said no. So obviously it just wasn't like, hey, I just want to get the hell out of here. I do know for a fact before the job was, because the job is now open, the coach has been fired. When it was pretty obvious that coach was going to be fired about 2 months ago, he got a call from someone at that school asking his interest, and he was like, I'm okay. So I think Georgia Tech brings on a special situation.
Makes sense. Makes sense. So before we go to break, you touched on something that that will probably lead into our next conversation. So is Missoula in a position now, like you said, kind of thin with the coaching ranks a little bit, but I think with him still being a first year head coach, if you will, I always find that line to be hard. If you bring in like a top name assistant, like, I don't know, a name like James Rago was out there, right? I mean, could you bring in James Rago to be a special assistant for the remainder of the year? I remember when D'Antoni was doing that stuff for the Nets, and I think the Sixers for a little while and stuff like that as well too. Do you see Boston maybe kicking the tires on somebody like that, or would the power of a name like that be too overwhelming for Missoula to some degree on the sidelines, do you think?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, though. I see what you're saying, Warren. If it was like, I don't know, someone who was clamoring to be a head coach again. Mm-hmm. Like if it was, but to me, you could bring in, like, let's say years ago when Memphis brought in Larry Brown, okay? Like, Larry's not trying to be a head coach anymore. Gotcha. Larry's just trying to give his advice. He's just trying to be on the sideline. James Borrego, maybe, but he's a guy who's, didn't do great in Charlotte, but could offer some assistance there. To me, I do think if you hire the person who is kind of clamoring to get back in, then that could be it. But you also have guys, Warren, that just want to be on the sideline again. Assistant, head coach, third assistant, they just want it back in the life. They want to help.
Yeah, you know what, Gary? And you're right, though, because I've seen a lot of guys humble themselves with that, too. I think of Jaeger as well. He's like second tier. Mike Brown did it for a while. He obviously has done a great job now as a head coach back again in Sacramento. So I saw a trend a few years ago where a lot of guys were taking that second and third chair with no ego about it one way or another. I don't know Missoula well enough to kind of understand. It's like, all right, would he feel intimidated by that? Like a Terry Stotts or somebody like that. These are like kind of bigger, really well-established names out there. But yeah, we're just getting your thoughts on that in general.
Yeah, I do think that I don't think Missoula's looking over his shoulder. But I do think it'd be a little bit arrogant, in my opinion, for him to be like, no, we're good. We're not going to hire anybody else. We're going to go with Ben Sullivan, Aaron Miles, Mike Moser, a guy who's played college ball and is a good rising young assistant, but he's 32. Like these, you're dealing with a 30-something staff. Like everybody's in their 30s, And you might need a core. I mean, and Damon at 48, 49 now was kind of the old head on the staff, even though he still looked like he can play, give you 15 minutes a game. So I would think that if I'm Missoula and I'm Brad Stevens, I am looking at some potential assistant coaches to help out. Like, you're trying to win a championship this year. Yep. And so you got to throw, and that means Joe got to throw his ego out the door. If this assistant coach looking from the outside looking in can say, listen, guys, I've watched your last 15 games, and this is what I see. Okay, this is what coaches are planning for. This is what people are saying about you guys. This is what, like, let me add some assistance. I think you got to definitely consider that. And that's the thing about, this whole thing, the goal, the end game is championship. Not, well, I want to feel secure with my job and I don't want to have anyone, take my, you got to move forward and figure out if you need another voice. And you lost a key voice. You lost their backcourt coach, their old head, Tatum and those guys. They knew who he was. And that's important in the NBA, Warren. You know that. Like, these guys want to see somebody that they're like, man, I used to play with you in 2K, or man, my dad used to talk about you. That means a lot in today's NBA. Look at Chauncey Billups in Portland. Look at some of these guys that are coaching in the league. Like, that credibility means an awful lot. Or if you don't have that credibility, if you didn't play like a Taylor Jenkins or, you know, coach in Oklahoma City, you get your staff, you get someone on your staff who it has coached,
yeah,
and sorry, played and been there, that these guys can look to and say, hey, like, can I talk to you about something going on here? So who knows? And you know what? I mean, I know she's kind of an assistant to the general manager, but Allison Feaster's out there. Why not put her on the, give her, she knows the game. She played in WNBA. If you want to go that route, I see that. I think that'd be great to bring her on and have her. Now she might say, listen, I don't want to be coaching no more. I'm the like assistant GM kind of thing. I'm sitting, I watch, you know. Now she might not be interested in that, but I think that that's a fantastic idea if that, you know, if they need another voice and someone who knows the game. But I do think they need another voice.
Well, you know, we wish Damon Stoudemire all the best, you know, in his future endeavors here. Again, a quality hire by the University of Georgia Tech. We sorely missed on the Celtics sidelines, and hopefully Boston can find a way to fill the void, fill the gap, as you alluded to here, Gary, because, yeah, I think there's some things missing here. And on the other side of this break here, we'll talk about what's been happening with this team a little bit, and you know, see if there's a way to kind of right the ship here on the other side of this here on Believe in Celtics, brought to you by BetOnline. We'll be right back. And on this week's edition of Geno Time here on Believe in Celtics, brought to you by BetOnline, Gary and I are going to discuss the Celtics' recent slide. And I'm going to ask you a very, very simple question, Gary. It's simple. Are the Celtics bored? Is that what it is? Are they just bored? Or are there some fundamental situations you know, chinks in the proverbial armor here that we're seeing where this team may be not as dominant as we once thought they were to begin the year?
Well, I think a combination of both. I think that they're being – I just think there's just something about playing teams lesser, you perceive as lesser, that it's just – they're just not playing up to the capabilities. Like, it's one thing, the Brooklyn thing, you thought, okay, they learned their lesson. You lose to the Knicks, okay, that was a tough game. Knicks are a good club, you know, and – then the Cleveland game where they, if they win, you know, they were shorthanded. They missed a couple of free, they missed, you know, Grant Williams missed those free throws. If they hit one of those, then the whole narrative is different. That was that'd be one of the more quality wins of the season considering the circumstances. They lose that. They come back and win two in a row. They beat the Blazers up. They, you know, kind of outscored Atlanta. Though they led, you know, like the last three quarters pretty much. And we're able to win that one. But this game against Houston was just really concerning for me in terms of just their seriousness. It's the typical thing, Warren. You let young teams get this that confidence. Like, Houston's got a bunch of dudes that are athletic. They can play. They're just young, and they make mistakes. So you got to punch them out quickly. You got to knock them out. You got to put the, you know, sumo hold on them. Like, you can't keep them in the game. And it was like they jumped out 6-0, and then they got enamored with the three. Like, we're just going to take threes. I think they took, Warren, they take, I think, 14 threes in the first half quarter, something to that effect. Like, they're just launching threes, and they, you know, they were awful with them. Houston hit the boards. They stayed ahead in the first half. Like, they got to the free throw line, I think, 18 times. The Celtics 5 in the first half. Like, I you know, I watched the game, whole game. Yeah, they were calling a lot of touch fouls. Like, I understand the Celtics' frustration with officiating because there were a lot of, like, whatever, a lot of touch fouls were being called that weren't being called on the Celtics' side. But this is the Houston Rockets, 15-win team. Yeah. Like, they do this all the time. Like, what I found out, Warren, about bad teams is very few teams are just bad. Most bad teams are good for 3+ quarters. Then when the 8-9 minutes left, then they fall apart. As we saw, Houston almost fell apart in the last 3 minutes, right? Like they almost like if Jalen hits that third free throw, it's a tie game. The whole complexion of the game is different. Yep. The Celtics don't have to foul and all that. Like it would have been tied up and it would have been definitely a different tone of the game if Jalen hits that free throw. You know, they turn the ball over, then Jason tries to save it with a behind-the-back pass. Like, instead of just getting the ball and calling timeout when you're falling out of bounds, he does this – he tries to do this, like, you know, dramatic, behind-the-back, oh, sports center play. And what happens? He throws it right to Kenyon Martin. I mean, it's just, like, I think that – they're disrespecting the game and they're paying for it. You know, like Jason's trying to shoot too many damn threes to get himself going. Marcus is in a different stratosphere, right? Marcus is not, he is back to the 3-point launch in Marcus, as we, a lot of the Celtic fans remember and don't love, the guy who at any opportunity chucks a three. And he was that guy last night and just not making plays, you know, not, you know, missing layups or shooting the ball, shooting, thinking he got fouled. So he shoots it. They don't make the call. Then he sits and argues about it. Why all the other nine guys go down the court. I just think it's a combination of boredom. And you know what? It's coaching too. Like Missoula's got to, like Missoula's not getting these guys ready. You yeah. cannot lose that game against the Rock. You can't lose that game. They lost a full game to the Bucks. In the standings, they'll look back and be like, whoa, how come we didn't get the number one seed? How come we're playing game 7 in Milwaukee? How come we're playing Philadelphia in the second round? Just look at the Brooklyn game and look at the Houston game. And you'll see why. Like, that was embarrassing. Houston, and then, you know, as you saw, Warren, then what happened? The Rockets in the fourth quarter started making plays. That sequence where Usman Garuba hit consecutive threes. One, I looked up his numbers, Warren. He's literally a 50-something percent. He doesn't take a lot of threes, but he's hit 50% of them. He's a good three-point shooter. I was like, wait a minute. I've never known this guy. I don't know much about him, but he's a kid from Spain. You know, he played in the Spanish national team, played in the Olympics and all that. He can shoot three. I can look now, Warren. He hit 2 for 2. Before last night, let me see here, check my totals here. He was 21 for 38 from the three, 55%.
Lights out.
Yeah. So he doesn't take a lot, but he makes damn near 60%. Then he made 2 last night. So I know you got to give up something, but that's not good coaching. If the dude is made 55%, somebody's got to be like, dude, we just can't leave him sitting there. And what happened? He hit 2 in a row. Then Kenyon Martin Jr. hit 1. And you're like, see, now they're making plays.
Yep.
You didn't give them the confidence. Now they're starting to hit shots. They had nothing. They still can't stop anybody off the dribble. So Jalen Green was getting to the rim and getting to his spots anytime he wanted. And it's just like Jason was in outer space. And then Jason, I don't know why they gave the last shot to Jason. Jason's going too damn fast and tries to do this. I don't know why he didn't try to dunk it and get a foul. He tries to do this pretty layup. He shoots it too hard. Like, it's just all the things that you see from this team, Warren, comes back. And it's just like, have they learned anything? 72 games in? Sorry, 69 games in? Like, I don't – it's just, you know, Grant's not playing well. They still haven't figured out, like, do they need – like, they still get killed on the offensive rebounding. Houston killed them on that. Just guys standing in front of the basket. Oh, ball. Okay, let me lay it in. And ones. Like, simple stuff. And it's just like Houston didn't play exceptionally well, but they played well enough. Yeah. Then in the fourth quarter, when the Celtics are trying to make this valiant comeback, then they start making plays. I thought the key sequence was that those three-pointers, I think in 3 to 4 possessions, 2 by Garuba, whatever, and the other one by Kenyon Martin Jr. Yep. And you're scoring. So they scored 9 points in what, like a minute 30, and the Celtics were down 9. And it's just like, you know, then they got to make this valiant comeback. And what happens? Jalen misses the free throw. Jason tries to make this heroic behind-the-back pass. Like, stuff that just – it's ridiculous. And then Jason misses the layup. I'm not going to blame him for missing the layup. I just think he was going way too fast trying to get to the rack, and he should have probably tried to dunk it or draw the foul instead of doing the pretty, let me avoid you. So I think they're bored, but I also think there's a problem with just motivation. And it's getting to the point of just like you can't count on them. And this is reminds me, Warren, of the Brad Stevens teams a couple years ago when Brad had no idea what team was going to show up every night. The 36-36 year. Like when he just was like, I have no idea how we're going to play.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because as you alluded to that, they're 36-36. They're 5-5. They're a 500 team since the All-Star break and literally middle in the pack in almost every significant statistical thing you could think about. Offensive rating, decent rating. They're somewhere between 13th to 17th. So it's like they haven't fallen off a cliff per se. They're not 2-8 or something like that. But at the end of the day, if you have championship aspirations, this is not how you want to close out the season. And I'm very concerned for them in the aspect of like, yes, Milwaukee got unprecedentedly hot, hotter than they've ever been in the Giannis era, understanding, you know, winning 16 in a row and then whatever it is now, 19 out of 21 or something like that. Like they've been ridiculous to be able to catch and now surpass Boston, but it doesn't look like the Celtics are going to have much of a chance to maybe even catch them because they're letting things get away from them with golden opportunities. And that, as you alluded to, is really frustrating. And I've been talking to you about this pretty much the entirety of the year. I've never been comfortable. I've just never been comfortable because you could always kind of see some things like, yeah, they still have some of those bad habits. And then they'd figure out a way. And the beginning of the season, the shooting was so hot. The three-point shooting, the three ball was going in. And one of our New Year's resolution was like, listen, maybe get to the cup a little bit more. Stop shooting as many threes. That has not happened at all. They're still firing and chucking it away, you know, with reckless abandon. Now, Robert Williams has been in and out of the lineup, mostly out here for the good part of this since post-All-Star. That's problematic, but he's not the magic elixir. This is a team issue, and I love what you said, that I think we've been, I don't want to say hard, but I think we've been honest about Muzula. And while there's a lot of great things that he's brought to this roster in his first season, there's a lot that needs to be desired, I think, as a first-year head coach. And he can get better, and I would expect him to, but there's some things here now that are concerning, and now how do you right the ship, like, because the rope has been let go of. And Milwaukee is like, I'm looking at the standings, I'm like, well, damn, you better be careful because Philly's playing great basketball.
You could be the third seed, yeah.
Yeah, you could drop from 1 to 3, maybe.
Play the Knicks in the first round, which would be, and I'm sure the Knicks are like, no, the Knicks aren't scared of Boston.
At all.
You want to be out in the first round? I mean, they have games now left in the schedule, Warren, at Milwaukee and at Philadelphia. Like, you got to win one of those joints.
Yep.
And Milwaukee, like, the thing about Milwaukee, they have a damn personality. You know who they are. They're going to play the same way. Win or lose, they are who they are. The Celtics do not have that personality where it's like, we're going to lose or win playing our type of game. I watched that game in the second half against Sacramento. Like, Sacramento took all their shots, jumped up by 11 points, home crowd, the beam is booming or whatever you say, it's beaming in Sacramento, all that. Good club now. Sacramento's a number 2 seed, or number 2 or 3 with them in Memphis. So quality team, and obviously Giannis went nuts at 46 points, whatever, but like the Bucks played the same way. They weren't wavered. They weren't frazzled. They didn't go outside their box. They played the same way and gutted out a win. Now, let's see what happens, you know, in the next. Like, they got Phoenix tonight on a back-to-back. Are they going to have the same enthusiasm? You know, a Suns win would definitely help the Celtics. But the Celtics got to develop a personality, Warren. And it's not, let's shoot our way out of this game, out of it with threes. Like, they're just getting, like, you know, Hauser was awful last night. He had one. Like, everybody's trying to take threes. It looks good when they go in. But Tatum is just completely taking himself out of games. 1 for 9. Like, stop shooting, Jason, unless you're open. Quit trying to be pretty. That's that Kobe stuff he still, the Kobe-itis he used to have. And Jalen carried him. But it's just like, you know, and Brogdon is always good, but not a good night from Derek White. Marcus was just like a bull in a china shop. And I said, every time he gets it, every time he sees an open three now, like, let me take it. I got to take it. Like, no, Marcus, you don't have to take the three. You don't have to always take the open three. That's what they want you to do. And that's the thing that, unfortunately, you think that he's learned over his career, but he hasn't. I mean, he's at, you know, he's at 30. You know, we all know Marcus. Marcus is at 33.7% from the three-point line this year. Last year, he was 33.1. The year before that, 33.0. Like, he's at 33% in a career, 32.3. That's the guy you let shoot threes if you're the opposing team. So Marcus just obliges and makes it easy on defenses. And I love his brashness. I love his braveness. I love his ability, desire to make the big play. But there's just something that isn't right going on. And, you know, like in March, I'm looking at his numbers in March, the seven games since he's been back, 32.9% from the field. Like, he's not making shots. And it's just, you know, I don't know what they can do. You know, he's just not doing it. 10 games since the, you know, post All-Star, 36% from the field, 35% from three. I mean, it's just, it's not, you know, 27 turnovers in 10 games compared to 36 assists. That's the stat, Warren. 3.6 assists per game, the 2.7 turnovers. Oh, boy. You do not want a 4-3 assist to turnover ratio or a 3-2 assist. That's not good. You know, if you look at the first 42 games, Warren, 300 assists, 99 turnovers.
Wow.
So that's 3-1. That's good.
Yeah, three, that's where you want to be. That's the sweet spot, right?
Yeah, 3-1 is good. The last 10, 36-27. That's not good. That's close to 1-1. No, you need 3-1. So it's just, I don't know if he needs to rest. I don't know if they need to put Malcolm and Derek in the fourth quarter down the stretch. Do you trust him to make the big play? Is he going to chuck a three? I mean, I don't know if you watched the whole Cleveland game, but Marcus chucked a really early shot. I think they had a chance to really get the game. I think they were it was a tie game, or I think they were down one. And Marcus had the ball and chucked the early shot clock three in like the last minute and brick, you know what I'm saying? It just puts you at disadvantage. And Marcus is now getting a lot of fouls. He's back to, you know,
yeah, he is.
You know what I mean? You know, as much as, you know, I think everybody loves his fire and fiery style. He's got the ejection in Atlanta. You know, he fouled out against the Rockets. He had four against Portland. He fouled out against the Knicks. Like, he is just not, you know, I'm looking at his numbers, like, it's just not good ball, Warren. It's just not good ball.
Like I said, as you alluded to, Gary, it's tough to watch, I think, you know, holistically, because there doesn't seem to be somebody who can kind of just get them, you know, get them in line. Even when Horford plays well, like, they're still losing some of those games, and it's tough. So trying to figure out what it is it the veteran presence that's needed? Is it Mazzulla needing to step up in a way that, you know, maybe he hasn't figured out how to do just yet? Is it, again, they still have the roster spot, and I've been trying to figure out, like, you know, the minutes have been so dramatic for both Tatum and Brown specifically, and even Smart to some degree. It's like, all right, well, can you take some pressure off of those guys to kind of save them? Because I feel like you're going to wear them out as you were trying to, you know, get 60 wins or whatever, win the number one seed. Now these things, it's going left. It's not going the right way that you want to. So not that you're not trying to put it in You're not trying to downshift, so to speak, but you got to figure out a way to play smarter and then get them some rest so that they can be fresher and make smarter and better plays all across the board. Marcus Smart, Tatum Brown, the entire nine. We know what it is. Not many buyout or off the street guys are helpful, but is there anybody that you can think of that could maybe eat some minutes and be helpful, at least for the regular season, to maybe take some of that pressure off of them in any capacity, or is that ship already sailed?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I'd love to get Celtics fans' hopes up that a fresh body could be coming in, it just seems like they're not interested.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the Dwight Howards, DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, there's guys that are out there, LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, the three names we've talked about. You know, you want Hassan Whiteside. Like, and I'm not ripping these guys like, oh, they'd be terrible. It's just that, the Celtics are so cautious about their system. What annoyed me, is strange, was like Nerlens Noel was out there, and the Brooklyn Nets pick him up. And he's playing, he started for them. Like, you don't need a big man to score, eat up some minutes, block a shot, get a damn offensive rebound. You know, Moses Brown, the guy who was a Celtic for like 15 minutes, yeah. The guy who I saw had 19 rebounds in the first half against the Celtics when he was in Oklahoma City. He got
waived again by the Knicks.
By the Knicks from his two-way. Now, I don't know if he'd be eligible for the playoffs. I don't know the ruling about if a guy is waived and then signed to a two-way, and then if is he playoff eligible? I'm not sure about all those rules, but he's a fresh young body that you can throw in there. Like, you know, but it's like, there's a stubbornness of like, well, we want them to be real. Like you want to run Blake out there all the time. You want to run Cornette. You're getting killed on the offensive boards. You need a body active that can, and then show some enthusiasm. So, you know, Warren, the quote that really moved me, and I don't know if you saw the quotes from last night, was Jalen like, we got to cheer for each other more. And I even saw it during the telecast. Like, guys aren't on the bench cheering each other on. Guys aren't clapping. Guys are sitting there like it's a opera. You know, they're just sitting there. There's no enthusiasm. There's no guys on the bench just, hey, come on. You know, there's not those guys. They're just sitting there watching the game. They're not cheering each other on. I'm not saying, oh, this is a disjointed team and they're not getting along. It's just, I don't know what's going on. It's like, are y'all just really that anxious for the playoffs? You want that? You want Miami coming in? Miami ready to play y'all?
They don't want to see that. I guarantee you that. Not that Boston has any reason to be fearful, but that is a crap matchup that is going to drain the living daylights out of you.
Exactly. Exactly. You ain't taking Jimmy and the boys out in the sweep.
No. Nope.
You want Miami coming in? You ready a month early for the playoffs? Or it's like, what's going on here with their mentality, with their approach? I don't know, Warren. Like, it's hard to figure out, because they said, well, you know, we let the, you know, other team take it to us and we didn't have any the energy. Well, why not?
Yeah.
You got a day off. Okay. Like, what is it about? Oh, we just playing the Rockets. Like, you guys are not that good to be looking down on anybody. That's a real arrogance. That's a real problem. You don't look down to your damn opponent. It's they're pros too. Them dudes is damn lottery picks. First rounders, Kevin Porter, Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, third overall pick. Kenya Martin Jr. is a rising player. They ain't playing scrubs. Houston's playing just a bunch of young dudes who don't know how to play together yet. Right?
Yeah. I love what you said, though. Like, they've got to figure out a way to better respect the game in general. So,
yeah, well, disrespect of the game. You like the Brooklyn game, throwing balls off the backboard, trying to play this and one mixtape stuff, Tatum trying to take on five guys. They thought Brooklyn was done. And as we've seen, the Nets figured something out.
Yeah.
Now they're not going to be an easy first round knockout. Now, I'm sure some teams would rather play them because they don't have a quote unquote star.
Star. Yep.
But they're playing like six five dudes that are 6'8", and that's how they're stopping people. I watched them. I saw them play the damn Nuggets the other night. I mean, they shut down, not shut them down, but, like, they were blitzing Jokic. Like, they won that game, right? So, at Denver, Denver won the best home records in the league. So, like, to me, the Celtics have to figure out what they want. How much do you really want this? That whole we're ready for the playoffs thing, that's, I mean, I said, you want the Knicks or you want the Heat? You're not going to get – you're not getting the Bulls, or you're not getting, you know, it's like the 10th seed ain't going to win the play-in, man. Yeah. You're going to get Miami. If you're the second seed, you're going to get Miami or New York. You might be lucky to get up to get Atlanta, but you're going to get a team that's like, man, we ain't scared of them fools. We don't right in the garden and get take game one. You think Jimmy Butler's scared of the Celtics? You think Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero are scared of the Celtics?
Trust me. I live in the South Florida area. They want nothing more. They want nothing more. They actually probably want that matchup.
Miami is like, just wait to the playoffs. Let us in. Now, I'm sure Miami don't want to do the play-in thing. They don't want to have to play, you know, Atlanta at home. They don't want to do that. But it looks like they're going to have to because, you know, I don't know if they're going to catch the Knicks in the sixth seed, but like Miami's for like fully healthy, we can take out anybody, especially Boston.
Especially, especially I love what you said there. So as Boston now more or less is on this I believe their final West Coast trip of the year, Minnesota, Portland, Utah, Sacramento, Jesus, all coming up. It's going to be a rough go here for Boston. And, you know, these are all teams they can beat, but nothing, as we continue to say, is going to become easy for them. Minnesota is trying to get out of their play-in situation, you know, in the Western Conference. Portland is still fighting for a play-in situation. Utah, same exact thing. And the Sacramento Kings, best offense in the league.
Utah on a back-to-back.
So frightening.
Yeah, no Horford. If you would think no Horford and, you know, who else is going to rest that game? So you're not going to have a full doubtfully Robert will be back. So you're going to be shorthanded against Kessler and Markkanen. So yeah, like there ain't no, they lost the easiest game of the trip.
Yep. 1,000%.
Like you had to be 2-0 going into Minnesota. Minnesota's such a tricky team. You did now with Mike Conley kind of settling things down, Gobert, like you got guys. I mean, you know what I'm saying? The Ant-Man, like Minnesota could win that game by 15 points. Minnesota's so unpredictable. Or they could lose game by 15 points. You don't know about the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
But you wanted to be Warren 2-0 going to that. You wanted to end this trip 5-1 or 4-2. You wanted to be maybe 4-1 going in the SAC. SAC's gonna be a war.
Yep.
Okay. You try to think, okay, I think they're good enough to win at Portland. Utah in a back-to-back, tricky, and then SAC with 2 days off, so everybody's in on SAC. So they'll have full – they might even have Robert Williams for SAC. But I think they felt like we should be 4-1 going into SAC. Now that would take 3 consecutive wins. This team, I don't know if they're capable of that right now.
It's tough. It's tough. It's tough slaying for the Boston Celtics here, who still sits in the Eastern Conference. But again, it's basically all the work they did in the beginning of the year, as things have been, you know, very, very tricky, as Gary said here, especially since post All-Star. 500 basketball team, middle of the pack, and every basically statistic out there, still firing a bunch of threes. You know, some injuries here and there, knick-knacking injuries. We'll see what's up happening. You know, I'm a little concerned about the stubbornness, as you alluded to maybe even add a 10-day guy to just eat up some minutes here. But at the end of the day, they're going to do what they're going to do, and hopefully they can turn this West Coast trip around here after a terrible loss, you know, against the Houston Rockets. Gary and I will be back here, you know, at some point in the next week or two to kind of see how this West Coast trip finishes up. You know, that's all we'll discuss here on Believe in Celtics. Not to leave y'all on a sour note, but we're not going to sugarcoat. It hasn't been amazing. So we're going to tell the truth here on Believe in Celtics. But that'll do it here. He is the great Gary Washburn. Again, make sure you're following him on Twitter at GWashburnGlobe. Follow me at Shaw Sports NBA. And that's it, y'all. We'll catch you next time here. Believe in Celtics. Bet on live. Peace out.